This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Dunlop, and your other host here is Josue Cardona.
Hello, Kelly.
Hey, Josue. So today we're talking Black Mirror, and I could not be more excited.
I give your intro a rating of 5 stars.
Well, bring right back at you, buddy. You need the sound effect, too. It gives you a better experience.
Oh, yeah.
So as always, disclaimer, we're talking about Black Mirror, episode 1 of the 3rd season. So just... if you haven't already seen it, we're going to spoil it thoroughly. So if you don't want it spoiled, go watch it. Come on back. But if you've already watched it, buckle in. I'm super excited to talk about this episode. It hit me in so many feels. It might be one of my favorites.
Really?
Yes.
Favorite in the sense of how disturbing it was, how future forecasting it was. How funny it was.
for me, it registered in the emotional range the most. Like, I felt like there was the most emotional meat, as opposed to just, you know, oh, technology is something, is a bad thing and scary thing and used in a horrible way, or, you know, it's so far in the future we can't imagine. I feel like it's close enough to present day that you can put yourself there. So it's really easy to empathize with the people in that situation and the situations they find themselves in. And I feel like the episode is all about emotion, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So let me do the obligatory plot synopsis. I'm just going to say the first thing that says on Wikipedia, and then we'll just get right into it. Lacey Pound lives in a world where anyone can rate your popularity out of 5 stars from both friends and strangers due to technology inside phones and standard smart lenses that display everyone's name and current rating. And let's just go from there. That's all we need to know.
So first off, I'm really curious if her name is a pun. The fact that her last name is Pound, and it's dealing with social media, I thought of the hashtag, which used to be called the pound sign. So I don't know. It could be completely coincidental, but I kind of feel like things in the Black Mirror universe aren't.
Nothing happens by coincidence. Yeah. So, yeah. I doubt that that's something that they missed. Can't confirm, but definitely, yeah, I think so. I think so too.
So Lacey Pound, basically, I feel this episode is kind of a future cast of what would happen if that People app had actually taken off.
Yeah. Yeah. And to also... even if it didn't, right? Like, that description doesn't sound that different from where we are now. Have you ever judged anyone based on the number of followers that they have or number of friends on Facebook?
Not friends on Facebook, I don't think, mm-hmm. but on Twitter. But it's usually for verifying whether somebody is an actual account or not. Mm. You know, I don't. At least not consciously. I don't think I've looked at someone and go, oh, you only have 100 followers. You must not be important.
Gotcha.
But if it's, hey, you're an egg and you're saying you're my friend, but you've got 1 follower and you're shooting out spam. Yeah, I don't think that we're going to be friends.
Well, one of the reasons why people buy followers on Twitter is to, in some parts, in one way is to gain credibility, right? Like, if I were going to start saying that I'm an expert at something, I would rather have, you know, 20,000 followers and be able to brag about that. I know people who brag about the number of followers that they have relevant to other people in their field. And I think it's stupid. And it doesn't represent necessarily anything other than you know how to play the Twitter game or you bought followers. But I have the two judgments that I have made. One is a snap judgment where I'm like, oh, like that's weird. That person doesn't have a lot of followers. And the other one is, oh, that person has way more followers than I thought. That's weird. I wonder if they bought their followers. And that's just, again, snap judgment. That's not how I see everybody on Twitter, but it's happened to me, absolutely. And if I've never made decisions based on that. Like, I've made decisions based on, like, I'm looking for a caregiver, like a doctor or something like that, or a service, and I will be judgy on the website, right? So if it looks like they haven't updated their website in 20 years, I might think, like, oh, you know, are these, what's going on here? And maybe I've made decisions based on that, but not so much on social media.
Well, I think you bring up a really good point, the difference between rating a service and rating a person. So, you know, for example, Yelp, we rate services, you know, Uber, you can rate your driver. And so to me, that's an okay thing. I do put stock in that. You know, if a physician has all negative reviews, I'm much less likely to go to that physician. Mm-hmm. If they have one negative review and then like 10 positive, okay, you know, that does weigh in my mind and I'm more disposed towards them. So, you know, we brought up People at the start of this, which was an app that let you rate individuals in your life, just
rate
like
people.
Rate people like you would rate a business, which I think is why people got so upset about it. People as in human beings against the app called People. And so I think that's an important distinction. So, as far as Twitter, I have a hard time, but I can definitely relate to that on, say, something like YouTube, where if I'm looking for a tutorial and I see that there are two tutorials, one has a certain number of views on it versus the other, I'm much more likely to go to the one that has the greater number of views. Or similarly on Twitch, if a streamer has a number of people watching, if there's a larger number of people, I'm much more likely to tune in. Because it's like, okay, this must be quality. I guess that's a way of my mind processes it is that if this many people like it and have used it, then I want to be a part of that. And that kind of blurs the line between rating the individual and judging them and rating the service and judging that.
Rating a podcast on iTunes is another example. Rate PsychTech on iTunes, please.
5 stars, please. we'll give you 5 stars in return.
And those things have no... those ratings have no, like, they give no indication of how popular the show it actually is.
Right.
Necessarily. Yeah.
It's very arbitrary. And I think that's what you really experience in this first opening part of the episode is our heroine, Lacey Pound, is flicking through and five-starring everything. And I know I've had that experience where I feel bad giving someone less than a perfect rating. So if I took an Uber or you really have to push my buttons for me to give you a Yelp review that's less than stellar. So I think I really identified with her in that sense. And the moment when she gave a 5-star rating and the person gave her only a 4-star rating back and her indignation at that moment. It's like, yes, yes, I totally feel that. You are morally obligated to do good because I did good to you, which of course is not how the world works at all.
The idea of there being this unspoken rule about if I give you a positive rating, you have to give me a positive rating is absolutely in play. We did an episode on your Uber rating, right? And how that kind of affects... Because passengers have an Uber rating, right? And not just drivers. And there is this like push and pull, very, very strange dynamic because as a passenger, if my rating goes too low, drivers won't pick me up. And of course, the same thing, you know, is the opposite. And I don't know, something like when I finish watching a movie on Netflix or Vudu or something like that, I'll rate it. But that is because I want better recommendations, you know? It's not a popularity rating the way that it obviously is in this episode. And when the People app conversation started, it was really funny because people immediately started talking about how bad it could be. And the founder was saying, no, it's going to show... or promote like the positivity in humanity or something like that. I'm definitely paraphrasing, but it was, you know, it's going to show how good we are as a people. And holy shit. I mean, this episode, one of the moments that is like most cringe inducing for me is when Lacey is practicing in front of the mirror. She's practicing each and every one of her interactions. So her hellos, her laughs, because and why is she doing it? So that she can up her rating. And at that point in the episode, we don't even know the effect that this kind of popularity can have on other aspects of your life. It's just, it was just so sad to see. And again, that is how many people practice their duck face in front of a mirror before they take a selfie, right? I mean, that's, there are parallels to where we are right now. And I don't know, to me, it was really like hard to watch her do that in front of the mirror. I don't know how you felt.
I think when it really hit home for me was when you saw that the ratings were more than just, as you kind of said, a popularity contest, that there are real world implications for what these ratings mean. So she's living in a house with her brother. She really wants to get her own place. But the place that she is looking at is this really fancy looking community. And you have to be a certain star rating to live there. If I remember right, she's currently a 4.2 and she needs to become a 4.5?
To get a discount.
Oh, to get the discount. Otherwise, it's too expensive for her to stay there.
Yeah. And obviously, right, this is a company incentivizing popular people to live there so that they can, you know, either hike up the prices later or just brag about the fact that our community has an average of 4.5 or a 4.2 rating. And, you know, it's just, how do you incentivize people? You know, it's just like the more money you have, the more opportunities you have available to you, right? In some instances. And so she really wants to live in this place because, not because she needs to, but because she wants to live in a place that's fancier, right? And she can't afford it. It's completely out of her income range, and kind of like that's the path that she's this is her adventure, is to get from 4.2 to 4.5, all for a 20% discount on rent so she can live in a posh community.
I'm so glad you said posh, because that was the word that was bouncing around in my head too, is that she wants she wants this luxurious life. And I do find it kind of devious that the real estate agent showed a holographic projection of her and her potential husband or boyfriend, and them holographically interacting in very, very intimate affection displays. And it's kind of like almost preying upon this idea of having, you know, a house in suburbia with a husband and this kind of quote unquote American dream type of situation. And so good to know that real estate agents don't really change. Sorry if any of our listeners are real estate agents.
That's really the most advanced technology in the episode, is the ability to project you in a lifelike way in whatever way they want. That is messed up, right? Because it wasn't even like just – if you could show Lacey without her consent in a nightgown being caressed and kissed by another guy, you could do anything to anybody's image.
Yeah, that's a whole different –
yeah, I hadn't even thought about that.
I mean, what gets me is it actually made me think about sports psychology. And when you're working with athletes, a large part of prepping for big events and getting better is to visualize yourself doing the act. You know, visualize yourself making that clutch catch, making that perfect throw or that epic save. That's a large part of getting yourself into the mentality to do something difficult. And so I feel that by showing, you know, they made this visualization of what your life could look like and made it so much more real for her than what she could have had in her head. So I do find that rather devious.
It's the worst.
And so the next part that really spoke to me, it's jumping ahead a little bit, but it's on the same idea of your rating has a really significant impact on your life, is when she's at the airport trying to get to her quote-unquote friend's wedding, and we'll talk about that more later, but the idea that she goes to the airport and since she had one negative interaction, she bumped into somebody, they downvoted her, and now she can no longer book this last flight that she needs to get on to go to her friend's wedding. And I sat there thinking, that feels like today when you know, your platinum customers can board, and your super platinum, and your diamond, and your emerald, and your steel, and eventually you get to the steerage passengers. And so that, again, just enough realism to make me easily understand how this could work in society now, not some kind of future dystopia.
The weird thing is that, you know, security comes up to her. And instead of saying, you know, we're going to have to come over here, we're going to have to call the cops, we have a special security area, their go-to thing is, we're going to lower your popularity for 24 hours. And that shows you that in this world, that is a worse punishment than so many other things. It's like the worst thing that anybody could do to you is that, you know? It's like not even – I can imagine at a school – you know, if a teacher could do that, kids would be so well behaved. Right? It's like that would be worse than taking their phone away, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, this is your final warning. If you do that, you're going to lose Snapchat privileges for 20 minutes.
Oh my God. Yeah. And then on top of that, even worse, double damage. So that anytime somebody rates her negatively, it does double damage on it. I mean, that might be the worst thing ever.
Yeah, it's so then you have to be, it's an incentive. Not only, so your punishment is this, and that is your deterrent from misbehaving, right? Mm-hmm. So being, you have to be politically correct and socially responsible. So that means, you know, being nice to every single person that comes across you. And you know, and like immediately after that, you see that experience where she goes to the rental car, and the good cars are only available for people who are at like a 3 and up or a 3.5 and up or something like that.
Yeah.
And she's in, you know, in the crappy line, which is, it's so weird the way they represent it, right? It's almost like they're showing different socioeconomic classes through the popularity. Right. So I think that the same way that you would have a wealth gap, right? Like we have a wealth gap now, you would have a popularity gap just because of the same factors. But there it's represented in this way. Oh, it's so weird.
And that was something
it is super disturbing.
It was something I had in my notes that I was going to get to later. But, you know, since you brought it up, I noticed that this episode was very white.
Black Mirror so white.
Well, the thing is, since Rashida Jones directed it, I feel like this was really intentional. You know, she's biracial, and I feel like the use of anyone of color was really, really strategic in the episode. So, for example, there were no people of color in the fancy neighborhood. There were no people of color at this really hoity-toity wedding where everybody was 4.5 stars and up. And
but her dream husband was.
Her dream husband was, which I thought was interesting. The person she bumped into that lowered her rating at the very beginning was a person of color, was a mother with a daughter. But otherwise, they were all service people. So the woman at the airline counter was a person of color, and so was the security guard. And at the end of the episode, which we'll get to, was also it was an African-American. And it felt like it was so strategically done that there had to be, I mean, nothing is on accident. So even the shots themselves seem really whitewashed. So all of the clothes were pale colors. There was so little in terms of like rich or vibrant colors. Everything was really washed out. And I think that's a really important thing to notice, because if this kind of thing were implemented in today's society, and it, in some ways it really already is, I would imagine that people of color would probably be at some kind of institutional racism bias, where they are, just by the fact of being themselves, automatically going to be rated at a lower favorability rating than your white male or your white female. And I feel like the episode definitely toyed with that idea. Just by the way, the way that the characters were and the settings were shot and were placed.
And that's probably the least, I don't know, it's not a stretch, right? Because that's just the way things are. If you're a racial minority, if you're female, right, you earn less, you're less likely to win awards, like all these things, like we're constantly making strides in these areas, but this would just be another thing, right? Every time there's a new thing, just like in technology and things like that, right? Especially in technology, where it's coming from affluent white neighborhoods or affluent white people who are the CEOs of these companies. And, you know, you see an effect, you see something that happens, whether it's conscious or not. And this would, you know, this is like, that's just like a given, I think. And it's interesting because we don't know, we have an idea of how long this system has been in place in this world because of the truck driver later, right? But we don't really know how far into this system it is, because I would hope that, you know, 100 years into the system, there would be, you know, some equality, or maybe it's regional, just like a lot of things are now, right? Just so you're a minority or a majority in a specific place, and the place that we saw was just very white. That's possible.
Yeah, it was so white it creeped me out, I guess, is a way to put it. And I mean, you see these kinds of things happening. You know, there's the idea of cities in, you know, Michigan, and there was just this American Life episode about fear of Somali Muslims in Wisconsin, and how people are just so afraid of those that are different from them for not malicious reasons, but reasons they probably don't even fully consciously understand themselves. And so, you know, there was one city who asked their congressman to just not allow any more refugees into the city, and refused the notion that this is America and you don't get to say who lives where. But in a system, I mean, you kind of do with rent and whatnot and gerrymandering. Anyway, in this system, it would be so easy to organize and just everybody you see who you don't like, you just downvote so that they can never live next to you, or they can't sit on the airplane next to you, or they get the crappy rental car because you don't think they should have the nice rental car. So there's so much danger in being able to rate somebody based on automatic, implicit thought processes, and then have that rating have real world significance. You know, you could ruin someone's life so easily, as we see happen in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, imagine for the elections that you try to deter people from coming to vote because threats of having a lower rating. And right now, you know, a lot of people are early voting, and I know of people who have said, you know, I'm afraid of going to vote on that day. I would much rather vote earlier because I don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So just imagine that you had in your power the worst possible thing you could do to society, you know, other than like a violent act, which would be to ruin their reputation.
Yeah, and it's not just reputation; it's their life. You know, it's not a popularity contest like how many friends you have on Facebook. It comes down to, you know, basic decency of where can you live, can you eat. Can you get in line to go to the airport? It affected every part of her life and of the characters' lives. And, you know, when you watch the actors, they do such a great job because all of their expressions are so fake. They are realistically fake. Yeah. There's these smiles plastered on their faces, and it's really unnerving. And I think this is kind of where the emotion part really started to connect with me, is that, as we mentioned, when she's at the airport, she loses a bunch of points because she starts to get rowdy. She screams the F word and she shows genuine emotion, and everyone is completely taken aback. Like the idea that somebody would express something that's outside of this pristine box of emotion is for them horrific. And I just kept thinking about Anchorman and Ron Burgundy screaming, "I'm in a glass case of emotion," because that's what it feels like. Is they're behaving quote unquote good out of fear, and that never ends well ever.
You know, the society could adapt to that and not have that reputation mean what it means, right? This week, Airbnb instituted a brand new agreement for all renters and rentees, right? And it's a non-discrimination agreement. And so now, I think beginning November 1st, when you log in, you have to agree to this thing. Otherwise, you are unable to rent out your place or rent from anyone.
Good.
Yeah. yes. Right. And so my thought was, okay, yeah, no, I mean, that's fantastic. But I could already see another company coming in, you know, the Freedom Airbnb, where it's like, hey, we don't have no stupid, you know, agreement that you have to sign. You rent to who you want and you rent from who you want, and we're good. And then I could just imagine it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure it's already happening. And so in a world where your reputation means, or that your popularity rating means all of these things, it means all of these things because people allow it to. Because you could just as easily take a stance the other way, right? Instead of giving you that, 20% discount if you're a 4.5, you know, well, I don't actually like people. I don't like most people who are above a 4.5. This is a 4.0 to 4.4 only, you know? And that type of thing could exist. But this is, you know, Black Mirror taking an idea to its extreme where everybody is kind of relying on this popularity rating, this universal popularity rating, where you don't really have to come up with your own because, you know, this one exists and it's a pretty good measure of – and then people start filling in that blank with whatever it is that they want it to represent. And yeah, it's very scary, very scary.
Yeah. And so, you know, after the airport, she goes to the rental car place and she gets stuck with this really crappy rental car – and has a really interesting experience with the rental car agent. You know, she gives him 5 stars and he gives her, I think, like 1. And then she comes storming back to him and he basically just tells her off, like, I don't care. And so I think that's kind of getting to your point that not everybody is so heavily invested in this reputation system that they don't really care. They kind of see Lacey as entitled and are like, whatever, I don't care.
The greatest thing about this episode, I think, is when you suddenly see the other world, right? When you see those two rent-a-car lines and you see that she's forced into the other one and you see people that don't look like her. From that moment on, the entire – like, she has been cast out, you know?
Yeah, she's been excommunicated.
Actually cast out, yeah, from her class, and now she's in this lower class and she starts interacting with people in the threes and below and – these are completely different people. These are people who don't care about the rating system. These are people who probably find it to be a joke. Her brother is the only indication that you see that not everybody in the world is like that at first. Mm-hmm. And then she ends up in this world, right? And she does not adapt well at all.
No, she keeps trying. Coping. She keeps trying to put the social norms that she's used to onto a world that has completely rejected them. And you yeah. see the social discordance that comes from that. And yeah. I think at least one of the most touching moments for me is after she's been in the rental car and it runs out of juice. And because the car's so old, she can't charge it. So she starts hitchhiking and she comes across Susan. And I want to be Susan when I grow up. I really, really dig Susan. So Susan is driving, I think it's like a trash truck or some kind of demolition truck, and offers Lacey a ride. Now, one thing I think we forgot to mention at the beginning is that everybody has implants in their eyes, kind of like contact lenses that lets you instantly see what somebody's rating is. And so when Lacey looks at Susan, Susan's rating is 1.2, 1.3. And Lacey originally says, no, I'm good. She would rather walk God knows how far than to get in a car with somebody who is such a low rating. And
the irony there is that before Susan stopped, nobody else would stop for Lacey because her rating was too low.
Exactly.
And just by asking for a ride and standing in the street, people were rating her.
We're downvoting her.
She's like, why did you do that? I didn't even do anything. I'm just walking here. Yeah.
And yeah. That goes back to the very beginning of the episode too, when she's at work and there's a coworker who something happened. I think he broke up with his significant other and the office is talking about it. And now he's trying to offer muffins as kind of like condolences to get people to uprate him. But then if you interact with him, you get downrated. And so it really makes somebody who's had a bad day toxic. And so, but eventually Lacey does, she gets into the car with to this demolition truck with a woman named Susan, who looks like she's in her maybe 50s or 60s, and basically gives a story about how she was in the system. She was like a 4.5. She was just this awesome, amazing person. But then her husband got sick, and the care that he needed was given to somebody who had 1 point higher, so had a 4.6 instead of a 4.5. And then her husband ended up dying of cancer. I think she even says something like, cancer doesn't care what your rating is. And then from that point on, she just kind of said, F it, and started experiencing and living and expressing herself the way she wanted to without fear or reservation. And I
drinking
think,
from a red thermos.
Yeah, classic. And I think she's really the first person in this world that you see who seems content, who seems happy, who seems to have genuine positive emotions.
Yeah. Because even the brother, who just seems relaxed, isn't, I wouldn't say he represents happiness or anything like that. He's just kind of a counterpoint to Lacey. But Susan is smiling and she's helpful and she doesn't
kind.
Care about your rating. She's super kind. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like the
warm
fuzzy.
She empathizes with her situation. You know, she's like, I know, I was you. I was you.
Yeah.
And honey, this is not, trust me, like one day you'll see. One day something's going to happen and you're going to realize how messed up the system is.
And so they have this nice moment, and then Susan drops her off as close as she can to where Lacey's trying to go. And Lacey manipulates her way onto a con bus or a convention bus full of some kind of fandom. Lots of cosplayers on there. And that made me a little, I guess, kind of irked me a little bit, this kind of stereotypical portrayal of super fans and cosplay and their inclusive clickiness and judginess and easy to manipulatedness. Well, what did you think about that? Because you're a super fan, just like I am, of several nerdy things.
Yeah, I didn't. I liked what it did. Now, I don't necessarily think it's a misrepresentation. It's an exaggeration of most, right? But it wouldn't. It's not weird. Especially they should have probably done it as a. Instead of like a sci-fi show fandom, it would have seemed more realistic if it was kind of like what is it that people that follow fish around the country and bands like that, you know?
Roadies.
It is like the, yeah. You know, like these caravans of people. It's like, oh yeah, like I'm one of you. You know, like you want the like part of the excitement is that community, just meeting people. And if you're one of us, then absolutely, come on. Like that's all we need to know. And it's very much a different version of the popularity rating, right? You have to answer the trivia questions correctly. You have to know, certain key factors. You need to know what we're called.
There's a litmus
test. How we identify.
Test.
Yeah, absolutely, right? And so she doesn't pass that. She tries at the beginning, and they're immediately welcoming. But then they see right through it. And it's just another version of the popularity rating. And you know, she obviously doesn't fit in, and they kick her to the curb immediately. There isn't that compassion that Susan had, right, about just helping people.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because I think I completely missed that. I think I completely missed the parallel of the social inclusiveness from the rating to, hey, this is a sci-fi convention that I really like.
Yeah,
I retract my statement about not liking it now.
Hey, is somebody going to be offended? Sure. Somebody can identify 100% with that bus full of I forgot what they were called, but yeah, absolutely. Like especially, yeah, like there's you've been to RTX.
Yes. So anyway, she gets kicked off the bus.
Yeah.
And then kind of the next scene of compassion is a guy riding his dirt bike in the mud, just like beneath a bridge. So again, you're finding.
I wonder what she offered him.
Yeah, I was really curious because they leave you wondering. She asks, can I borrow your bike? And the next scene you see is she's driving on it. And so I'm wondering, did she steal it? Did she kill him? Did she, like, what did, you know, her life is this huge downward spiral. I don't really think that anything is out of her realm of capability right now. You know, everything is just slipping from her fingers and she's desperate. And so she ends up on this bike. And it's, I don't know, it just was kind of, maybe if I watch it again, I would pick up on some more things, but
Oh, we've obviously haven't watched it in a week because we didn't mention where she's going.
We said that she's on her way to a wedding. On the way to the wedding.
Oh, we did. Okay. Well, then before we get to the wedding, I think it's very important to point out that her best friend from when she was little, who, according to all accounts, was just a mean girl who was using her back then too, as far as I can tell. Is that your feeling too. And is now sees an opportunity to so this world, the popularity rating is so ingrained that when Lacey wants to go from the 4.2 to a 4.5, she seeks out a popularity rating coach to help her do that. Right. So much like you would go see a therapist or a coach, right, to either improve a business or personal development or deal with any problem. She's doing one-on-one sessions with this guy, and he's looking at his stats, and he's looking, you know, he's got a analysis, and he's forecasting, and he's like, listen, if you do this, we can definitely get you there in this amount of time. And a part of that for her is reaching out to her friend, who is a 4.8, I believe. And she's super popular, and now she has a wedding. The friend has a wedding. She reaches out to Lacey. She asks her to be her maid of honor. And that's really weird, right? The way you see it, it's like, oh, what exactly is happening here? And Lacey's like trying to create this story in her head of how they were best friends and how she loves this girl so much. And so Lacey wants to go because this would definitely get her to that 4.5 very quickly, because a lot of people with high popularity ratings are there. Her coach confirms it as much. Oh yeah, this wedding, you as maid of honor, give a good speech, you are set. Like, you're definitely going to get bumped up. Much the same way, you know, you think, oh, I'm going to write this blog post, or I'm going to tweet this funny thing, and it's going to get me so many likes and so many more followers, and this is my ticket. You know, this was her ticket to raise her popularity rating. And then before all this stuff went on her way, right, before the bicycle, somewhere around the rental car, right, when she's driving a rental car, the friend admits that the only reason she wanted a 4.2 to come to a 4.7 and above wedding is because in polling, forecasting, I don't know, something like that, they saw that would play really well with the crowd if a low 4 from her past was involved in the wedding party and gave a speech.
It's a pity vote.
Oh, but just like the fact that everybody is just playing off of each other.
Yeah,
right?
it's so
horrible to the point where
calculating.
Yes. And she's, oh, and then like, again, like worse than seeing Lacey practice her giggle and her hellos in the mirror was her practicing that speech over and over
and
again.
And her tear. Yeah, just everything is so carefully scripted that all genuineness, all real human connection is completely gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'll interject here and say something that really bothered me. Well, maybe it doesn't bother me, but the reason why this episode just like hit me hard, like really deep, was just the fakeness, the lack of being genuine. You know, nobody was a real person in that world where Lacey lived. I'm like, that stuff bothers me so, so much, to the point where I've gotten in trouble. I don't know what this says about me, but I've gotten in trouble socially at times for not doing things that are expected, right? So things like, you know, I asked you how you were. Why didn't you ask me how I was? I'm like, well, because that's like an automatic thing. And last episode we recorded was one of those weird moments where I said something like, oh, I didn't know if you were seriously asking me.
Yeah. But I said, hey, how's it going? Oh, do you actually care?
Yeah. That's not exactly how I said it. Go back and listen. but it was one of those things where that's the way my brain is wired. And I've had those strange interactions where it's like, I'll say no to something and someone says, what? Like, they're shocked that I said, no, you can't borrow my X, Y, or Z. It's like, well, why not? But I asked you politely. It's like, wait. We're two grown adults here having a discussion about why I'm not going to lend you I don't know, like my CD or something. I don't remember what it was. You know, this particular situation I'm thinking of. But again, so I've had those situations throughout my life, and they have formed who I am as a person, and they continue to. Things like, you know, if you're talking to someone on the phone and at the end, actually this happened to me when I was a kid. I remember a friend of my mom's called, and when I hung up, I said, "Oh, okay, yeah, I love you, bye." And afterwards, I was like, I was shocked, because I was like, why did I say love you to this person who is just a friend of my mom's from work? And I realized it was because, you know, that's the way I finish most of my phone calls with family, because it's expected. And it's something that I stopped doing automatically. And a lot of my family was like, is everything okay? I was like, why? Because you didn't say you love me at the end of the call. That's a really awkward interaction to have, but we play along, right? And those are kind of accepted. And then take that to the extreme where every single piece is, like you said, calculated. And seeing that for an hour and seeing Lacey continue to try to be that way, even on her motorcycle or on her like ATV, was just so painful to watch. It was very uncomfortable. And the worst part, of course, is when she gets to the wedding.
Yeah, she finally arrives at this wedding. She's disheveled and dirty and covered in mud, and she's snuck in. And she starts to give her bridesmaids toast just right there. And you can see like the terror in her friend Naomi's eyes, the bride's eyes.
And she's been told not to come.
Yeah, she's been told, forget it. You know, you're down to like a 1.0 or a 2.0. I can't have a 2.0 at my wedding. But she's there anyway. And one of my favorite parts is when Naomi, the bride, nudges her fiance, or I guess her husband now, and it's like, get rid of her. And her smile never leaves her face, that she's like kind of gnarling out of the side of her mouth. And his response is, but it'll play really bad.
It'll play bad. Yeah.
And it's like that, you can tell that's how they run their whole life. And I'm actually really curious to get your feedback on this. I got the impression that the groom and his best man were a thing. That's the impression I got. And so the idea that he was marrying her was totally out of, you know, complicitness with the system, and because these two should be together, and oh, it'll be a beautiful wedding, and they'll create 5.0 babies and whatnot. But like the way that he interacted with his best man, I had a hard time telling, is this over the top bro stuff because that's what's expected, or is there something going on between those two? Which I hope so, because I feel like that makes their marriage even more of a sham.
I didn't see it that way. I didn't think that there was any sort of romantic relationship. I did find it completely fake. I did confide. It's like, oh, we need to macho this up, you know, to 11, because that's the way it's going to play really well. And maybe because they both seemed out of their element doing that. Is maybe why you thought that? I don't know. But I didn't think that there might be a romantic thing. But again, it was just like everything's so forced and so
it's so
uncomfortable.
Hard.
Why are they doing this?
Well, I think that's exactly the point. Is you and I, who are literally trained to understand human relationships, cannot determine whether this human relationship we're seeing is authentic, because that's how
I thought it was
is.
Not. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Like the groom and his new wife, you know, do they actually like each other? Are they actually in love? I mean, that's what I'm saying, is that there's.
Well, there's no question there, because the photos that they posted on the stream were fantastic. So that obviously means that they were in love.
Of course. No filter. Hashtag no filter.
No filter.
So Lacey's out there giving her speech, and basically security is called in. She grabs a knife, threatens to cut off her doll's head. I wasn't quite sure what to make of that, other than the fact that the doll symbolized the relationship between her and Naomi's children. So maybe by threatening to kill it, she was.
Oh, did you think that the doll? So I thought that the doll was Naomi making fun of Lacey, like a deformed, ugly version of Lacey. So it was like a sick joke.
Oh, probably was.
Because it had red hair. But it was Mr. Buttons or something like that.
Mr. Rags.
But it was Mr. Rags, right. I don't know. I thought that they never say as much.
No.
But I kind of like their relationship was so disgusting that is what I thought that Mr. Rags actually was.
Kind of like in Wicked when Galinda gives Elphaba the black hat and says, it's really sharp, don't you think? And it's kind of mocking in a way, but... So anyway, we're getting to like my favorite part of the episode. Lacey gets drug away, and the entire time you can hear her popularity falling. Because when somebody downvotes you, there's a doo-doo-doo-doo, like a audio cue that something has downvoted. And to me, that's probably one of the most powerful things of this entire episode, is that you were always connected to the system, because even if you're not looking at your phone, because you hear it. It's like omnipresent. It's always there. And so you instantly, it's like you instantly know how people feel about you in that moment. And I know we've talked a lot about, you know, if you could read other people's minds and they could read yours, would you want that? And that's almost what's happening here, is it's instant dismissal of her.
See, but I don't think that but it's not genuine either, right? It's like, man, I really thought that that person was great, but I can't actually give her a 5-star because she's whatever, you know, or because he's this, or I disagree with this other thing.
When the herd mentality started, I think it absolutely made it impossible for anybody to help her. That would have been reputation suicide. I mean, in the beginning,
just like the guy in the office.
Yeah. Yeah. But in the beginning, she made a joke and somebody even laughed, and there was an uptick. So I was like, oh, maybe this won't turn out terrible. But then, of course, it's Black Mirror, so it did. So she gets hauled away into what apparently is a prison. They take the contacts out of her eyes. So when she looks at the person across the cell from her, she can't see his rating. Obviously, he's in jail. And now, maybe you can tell me, Josue, was she jailed because her rating got so low? Or was she jailed because she was an intruder? Maybe both? It didn't seem quite clear to me what exactly her incarceration was due to, because her rating was below one.
Yeah, so it's interesting, because knowing the world, we don't know for sure, right? But knowing this world as much as we do after 1 hour, part of me isn't surprised with the idea that her rating was just too low. And once your rating gets to that point, like, you need to go into some sort of rehabilitation, or you're going to jail, because it wasn't like a jail, right? It was like this glass cage.
I thought it was emotions. Future jail.
It could be future jail, right? But again, like, this world wasn't, there were hints, right? But it was strange. The thing that left like the biggest impression was when they take the contacts out. And it's almost like they're prying them from her eyes, right? It's like it's like they were you hear it, like it's pulling,
it
right?
Grossed
and
me
then
out.
Her there's this jolt. Yeah. It's like what how are those things like put on there? You know, that there obviously weren't contact lenses in the sense that like how we wear them today. Those things never came off. That's really weird. And they have only that purpose of kind of serving that reputation system. So at this point, she had just essentially, she broke into a wedding, so that's not a problem. But she did then grab a knife and essentially start, like, that's when she was arrested for a crime. That's probably the crime, right? Threats of violence, right? She tried to slice somebody, I think, right? I'm sure she swung that thing at somebody. So that's where she would have been arrested. But there's no indication really either way. But because of the way that the reputation rating was kind of like a punishment, I'm surprised that they took it off. Like, I would think that in jail you would have some sort of like you would be able to see that, right? Like that your reputation system would continue to be a factor in you getting sent to a different block, or getting different food, or having early parole, and the way a jury would look at you. I'm guessing, although it would probably be, I mean, it would definitely be much better if that wasn't the case, and it was. That element of it was removed?
Yeah, I took it as she was removed from society. I mean, even more excommunicated than she was previously, because without that, she can't possibly know who her betters are. She can't avoid people with lower reputation, that the ratings no longer mean anything because she can't see them. And so to me, that it was almost like taking off the rose-colored glasses, so to speak, or the rose-colored contacts, and seeing the world for what it was. That was my interpretation.
But if we could still see, like, let's assume that we could still see her rating, right? See, I don't know. I feel like if they remove the lenses, like, then you're out of the system, right? Completely. That's kind of the feeling I got, that at the end, she was free from it.
Oh my gosh. I have that exact note in my notes. Yeah. I turned to John after we watched it, and I'm like, I'm putting this down in my notes. Only was she, when she was in jail, was she actually free? Because
yes,
absolutely.
Her and the other guy, like, that's the indication. They're like, we are, like, we can breathe. We can say whatever we want. We're finally free. But I feel that if that wasn't the case, like, I feel like at a rating so low that the system can't make use of you, right? Mm-hmm. They can't manipulate you in any way. They can't overcharge you. They can't, like, now you're just such a, you're not even, you're beyond a burden. Like, there's no benefit to having you in the system. So you're out. And then, right, so we're removing you entirely. So now you are, again, yeah, she's free. Like, well, that scene at the end is like a breath of fresh air.
I'm always hesitant of a Black Mirror that I felt like it had a happy ending, which is obviously very bizarre for Black Mirror. Because I felt like she was in a better place than where she started, even though she was in jail. But I think that kind of goes back to the idea that what do you do with somebody who's not going to obey by your social rules? Because if her reputation is at 0.5, what are you really going to do to her? You know, threatening to downvote her isn't going to do anything. Threatening to double her downvotes isn't going to do anything. And I kind of feel like at this point, if you've gotten to freely experience those emotions, you wouldn't ever want to go back. It's kind of like shaking a can of soda and then popping the top. You can't get it back in. There's this release that happens, almost cathartic, if you want to talk about it that way. And I don't think anybody would ever really want to climb back into the glass case of emotion, as we're calling it. But yeah, it was so great to see her and her counterpart just scream obscenities at one another and genuinely smile, because it felt so good to be human, to be real.
To say what you were thinking,
yeah.
And say things that you would never say because it's not okay to say them.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that we should do that all the time, because, you know, that has its own problems. But kind of like I mentioned at the beginning, I felt throughout this entire episode that any display of negative emotion was punished. So any expression of anger or fear or anxiety or regret, any of the emotions that we tend to think of as quote unquote being bad, are punished. And there's only room for good. You know, there's only room for happy and smiles and positivity. And it's so stifling, because you're cutting off half of the human experience. So her getting to have all of those emotions, I thought was great. And it made me feel bad for, like, Naomi and the other people still stuck in this system to some extent. Not a whole lot, but to some extent. Again, I think Susan is my go-to. If I was in this world, I would want to be Susan.
My concern is that now Lacey is going to go through some sort of rehabilitation.
Some kind of brainwashing.
Yeah. Well, right. The extreme is she's a stormtrooper now. But before that, it's, you know, maybe just some sort of rehabilitation to get her back into society. And, like, I wonder, did Susan go through something like that? And they put her to work, like, you know, like, okay, well, you get to start at one. Good luck. And then she just never played the game again. But she had to go through a process to get back in, because everybody's in. Like, it doesn't seem like anybody has a choice. It's not like
Well, if I remember right, Susan doesn't have the contact lenses. She doesn't have the interface. I think she mentioned that in the truck. No,
she has a rating, and I'm
no. She herself has a rating, but I don't think she can see the ratings of others.
I'm pretty sure she can, and I think that's why she stopped for Lacey. There's a mention of it somewhere, but you remember the entire history of you where. There's this discussion about people who choose not to have the camera and the recorder all the time, right? So there's like this dynamic, right, where most people have it, but not everybody does. But here, that didn't seem to be the case. It seems like everybody has it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, I hope that she doesn't get quote unquote rehabilitated, because I enjoyed seeing her be angry and express these emotions that are so important to get out and not just kind of keep it bottled up, as the old cliche goes.
Yeah.
And I guess kind of the last thing that I want to touch on with this episode is the I'm going to quote Leslie Odom Jr. here from Aaron Burr in Hamilton, because we're just going to cross-platform this whole thing. He talked about, you know, imagine if your worst self on your worst day, and that's all anybody ever knew of you. Of course you'd be the villain. And I think about that with Lacey. You know, she had one bad day, and it ruined her life as she knew it. I mean, there is some kind of positive, good feeling at the end. But for all intents and purposes, I mean, her life is over. She might never see her brother again. She might not ever see her friends at work or whatever, even if she had genuine relationships. And it made me think of Justine Sacco. She was famous for the hashtag, Has Justine Landed Yet? She made a really horrible racist comment on Twitter before she got on a plane to go to Africa, something to the effect of, going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white, I think is the tweet she did. And it got picked up. It went viral while she was in the air. And by the time she landed, she'd been fired from her job. She'd become this internet pariah. And to me, that was like a real world application of what this society is like, is you do a dumb thing. You're your worst self on one day of your life, and it ruins your life for the foreseeable future. And you might not even know what's happening, but there's just this downward spiral that you can't escape.
Yeah. It's the tragedy is that when Lacey gets knocked down one point, if she would have just shut up and gone home, the next day when she woke up, she would have been back to, you know, it was only 24 hours. So by the next day, she would have been back up to 4.2 and still been able to, you know, rent out that new apartment. And it would have taken, you know, I don't know, what did the coach say? 6 months, 18 months, something like that, to get to 4.5.
Yeah.
And she could have still achieved her goals. But she was so desperate to make that jump and make that change, be a part of that other group, that she risked everything by renting that car and continuing to go. And right. So she had an opportunity. She didn't have to keep going, but her drive, her desperation for going up that ladder was like that. And I mean, in that sense, it's more like money as a currency, right? Than power as a currency, maybe, right? Where once you have a lot of money, it's easy to dole it out and it means more. Or if you don't have, like, there's more desperation to get more of it. And, you know, obviously, like, the parallels are there and they're obvious. And I think the caution, like, the greatest caution is that this type of reputation system that we already have because of social media and social networks, it's possible for it to take on more significance. And, you know, I find it funny that a lot of people make fun of LinkedIn, for example. Mm-hmm. But LinkedIn is a huge business because recruiters use LinkedIn to find people. And they pay a lot of money for a special version of a LinkedIn account where they can go into very, very fine detail and see all sorts of stuff about you. And LinkedIn has grown into not only having your resume on there, but you also have a blogging platform and a social stream. And the number of connections that you have, it's funny that LinkedIn has like a cap. After you have 500 connections, it's like, okay, we don't need to, you're set. But they could eventually change that to tiers. And even though you and I, as like regular users of it, can't see how many connections a person actually has, a recruiter can likely see that you're at a different level. It's like, oh, like you have 1,500 connections on LinkedIn, you're an influencer. And maybe you can get a job over someone who only has 30 connections or something like that. You know, and that's kind of like the closest example of a social network that has a real life consequence. Because if the recruiter at the company that you like is only using LinkedIn as a platform and is not just going and seeing your website or seeing your work, then guess what? You missed out maybe on your dream job or something like that. Or you're not visible to them. You know, you're not even on their radar. And so this type of thing can happen. And I mean, it's obviously it's the extreme. It's like the worst possible version of it. But there's a lot of truth to what's there.
I mean, the whole idea of influencers has really come about with social media. One of my buddies, Dan, he's actually been on SciTech before. His tag is Green Skull, and he started out just making YouTube videos, and now he can actually do that full time as his job. You know, he's had over 1 million views, and he's got, you know, basically all these people following him and paying attention to him. And so now brands are reaching out.
And companies sent him. Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Companies reach out. They have him, you know, demo their products, share their products. He just got back from China, I think, because there was some big thing going on there. And so here's an example of somebody whose popularity has propelled them to a different stratosphere of work. I mean, he gets to do something so very few many people do, you know, make internet videos for a lifestyle. And just, I think a lot of times there's negativity associated with that. Like, well, why is he so special? Dan's an awesome guy. He does great work. I love him so much. So this is not a slight against him, because he has worked really, really hard to get where he is. But yeah, so he's an influencer.
Well, it's not a slight against anybody. It's just the way the world works now, that if you have enough followers on Instagram, a company may reach out and say, I'll pay you $5,000, $10,000 to do a short video where you're using my product.
Yeah.
Or you say that you like it. And that'll take you 5 minutes. But you built up that following and
that's what
and
they
that
want.
Engagement. Yep, and you're an influencer, right? And I mean, influencers have existed before social media, right? I mean, that's always just been a thing. But the way that social media works, right, that interaction of having a quantifiable rating, right, where people are – that can fluctuate, that where the feedback loop is just so, so fast, you know, where you can walk into a room and immediately every single person in that room could upvote you or downvote you, that dynamic is very, very different. Because and then everybody's on the same exact platform, because now different platforms have different rules, and you know, you may be an influencer on YouTube, but you're not an influencer on Snapchat, and that type of thing happens, and that's like business, right? Mm-hmm. But as far as day to day, how often really? I mean, I completely believe that just like some people. You know, I'm sure people get fired or don't get a job because of something that they posted, right? That idea of like, oh, that drunk party photo you posted, like it didn't sit well with me. Or maybe it sat very well with me and that's why I'm hiring you. You know, like those things can have a certain effect.
Just to jump in here with some breaking news on the topic that we're actually talking about. We just got, as we're recording, we just got linked to via Twitter that somebody has published an article about like this week in awesome psych related things, and Psych Tech is on there for our last episode of the hashtag activism of things. So woohoo, go us.
So are we influencers now?
I don't think so yet.
Gotcha.
Maybe in the future. And I guess just one last thing that really bothered me about this episode, and it's such a picky, nerdy thing that'll be the last thing I leave on, because I'll probably get booed off the stage afterwards, is that the system that they have would like never actually work, because after you get so many votes, your status would never change. So for example, a gaming example, there was a leveling system in Halo from 1 to 50. And if you got to say like a level 42 and you've played a certain amount of games, just statistically speaking, you're not really going to be able to level up or even drop in levels, because just one or two or 10 or even 100 more votes is so infinitesimal to your overall experience that you're really never gonna, you're gonna top out at some point, statistically speaking, you're gonna level off. So this idea that you have this thing your entire life and you can continually just bump up and down based on one person's feedback, I was like, statistically, that's not cool. I don't like that. That makes me grumpy. That's not real.
But it is real, because what you do is you give different weights to different people at different categories.
But even then, so for example, getting knocked down, she got knocked down a tenth of a percentage point by the woman she bumped into on the way to the airport. But even a tenth of a percentage point is actually pretty big if you're talking about someone who's lived their entire life and doing, you know, 100 swipes a day, one incident, even from a really high influencer at a certain point. I'm not saying Lacey is at that point, but at a certain point, it doesn't matter who you are, you're not going to be able to have an impact on somebody just out of the sheer numbers of ratings that person's had.
But that's assuming that you're accruing all of them and they're all in one pile.
Wouldn't they have to be, like, though? Like, how else would you get your average?
Oh, you could do it. You could do it time-based, right? So, like, everything after – it's a running average of the last 30 days or 60 days or something like that. And I mean – and it has to be. I'm assuming it's something like that because of how hard everybody is working to stay there. Like, if this girl's at a 4.8, right? And you're right. So why is this girl at a 4.8 working so hard? She doesn't have to. She already made it. Instead, she's got an entire PR firm running her stream and planning out her wedding and choosing her best man and her maid of honor. You know, so I doubt very much that it's like cumulative over a lifespan, because you're absolutely right. Then it would be absolutely just statistically impossible to change that. But that's why you would make it different. Just like, you know, in different top scores and things like that, where, you know, that has to refresh or resets after a certain time. And that's the only way to keep it fresh, because otherwise you would have established a hierarchy. Like, the hierarchy is established. You couldn't even be born into one class and move to another.
But then how would something – okay, this is so incredibly nerdy. I can't even tolerate it. I love
stat
it.
Stat tech.
Yes, psych, that's stat. Our next – that's I like stat tech. But how then, for example, how would something like her living arrangement – because that's dependent – like, her having – being able to live there is dependent on her maintaining this, you know, 4.5. And if it refreshes every 30 days – how, because I well, again,
it would,
using
so it would have to take the last 30 days, right? Instead of refreshing every 30, I'm assuming, if I had to design this, right? So it's like, it's your last 90 days, right? Only. And then it doesn't consider the one before. And lots of stats, when you look at them, stats, you know, it is numbers, right? But when you look at different graphs and things like that, you're only looking at the last 90 days or something like that to give you kind of a general idea of where you are. No, because
so what you're
the truth
saying
is that it's irrelevant.
It's not, yeah, it's not recent, going like 90 days and then going back to zero. It's 90 days, and then when you hit day 91, that gets pushed out, and you're still only looking at the last 90 days. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Kind of like, oh, I had a real 89 days ago. I had one bad day. Can't wait two more days for that one to be out, and then my thing is going to go up, right? My rating is going to go up, and it has to be, because everybody is working so hard to be so fake. There has to be some sort of system like that. I mean, I'm assuming
It makes sense. Yeah. So for all the people who just enjoyed their preview of stat tech, or if we have any statisticians or math wizards that listen, I would love to hear your take on all this. But I think
I did horribly in stats class.
I enjoy stats because it's not really math. It's fake math, and I enjoyed that.
Software class, really.
Hopefully you all enjoyed this episode of SciTech and our coverage of Black Mirror. We're going to continue to review the Black Mirror episodes because they're just such great fodder. We actually already did review episode 2. It's on our sister podcast, which is called Headshots, all under our Geek Therapy Network umbrella. So you should definitely check it out if you want to review that episode of Black Mirror. And as always, you can check us out on our social media and give us lots of likes and 5 stars and whatnot. So psychtechpodcast.com, at psychtechcast. So you can reach us also on Facebook. So pretty much we're everywhere that you want to be. So let us know, and we'd love to hear your feedback on this episode of Black Mirror. And we will be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of Psych Tech.